I did fail to underscore one significant announcement, and that is that for the next 2 weeks, our office manager, Karen Cedar, will be on vacation. So I myself will be on strong drugs. But we have wonderful volunteers. We'll have, of course, Catherine will be in the office on Monday, and then Bobby Johansson and Nancy Schimmitz and Joyce Cox will be filling in the office over the next couple of weeks. So we should have coverage. Might be a little less efficient because of me, probably. Anyway, that'll be our office coverage over the next couple of weeks. Our text on this launch Sunday from the first chapter of the Gospel of John, Jesus has been baptized and has begun to call disciples, and this is really a call story, beginning actually with the 43rd verse. The next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him, "Follow me." Now, Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter, who've already been called. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him about whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus, son of Joseph from Nazareth." Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Philip said to him, "Come and see. Come and see." When Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him, he said of him, "Here is truly an Israelite of whom there is no deceit." Nathanael asked him, "Where did you get to know me?" Jesus answered, "I saw you under the fig tree before Philip called you." Nathanael replied, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus answered, "Do you believe because I told you that I saw you under the fig tree? Oh, you shall see greater things than these." And he said to him, "Very truly, I tell you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." And may God bless this reading and hearing of this holy word. The late great preacher and visionary youth minister, Michael Yaconelli, shared this story. Every month, a youth group from our church visited Holcomb Manor, a local nursing home, to hold church services for the residents. Daryl, a reluctant youth group volunteer, did not like nursing homes. For a long time, he had avoided these monthly services. But when a flu epidemic depleted the group's adult leadership, he agreed to help with the next month's service, as long as he did not have to be part of the program. The Sunday of the service, Daryl felt awkward and out of place. He leaned by himself up against the back wall. Just as the service finished and Daryl was thinking about a quick exit, someone grabbed his hand. Startled, he looked down and saw a very old, frail, and obviously lonely man in a wheelchair. What could Daryl do but hold the man's hand? The man's mouth hung open. His face held no expression. Daryl doubted if he could really hear or see anything. But as everyone began to leave, a moment Daryl had been looking forward to all afternoon, he realized he didn't want to leave the old man. Caught someone off guard by his strong feelings, he leaned over and whispered, "I'm sorry, but I have to leave. But I will be back, I promise." The man squeezed Daryl's hand and let go. Then, inexplicably, Daryl heard himself say to the man, "I love you." "Where did that come from?" he immediately thought. "What's the matter with me?" Daryl returned the next month, and the month after that, each time it was the same. Daryl would stand in the back, the man would grab his hand, Daryl would say he had to leave, the man would squeeze his hand, and Daryl would say softly, "I love you, Mr. Leek." He'd learned the man's name was Oliver Leek. As the months went on, Daryl would find himself actually looking forward to this visit with his aged friend. But one Sunday afternoon, Oliver was not there. Daryl was not too concerned at first because it often took the attendants a long time to wheel everybody out. But halfway into the service, still no Oliver, Daryl became alarmed. He went to the nurse's station, asked about Mr. Leek. The nurse asked him to follow her and led him to room 27. Oliver lay in his bed, eyes closed, breathing uneven. Daryl, age 40, had never seen someone dying, but he knew his friend was near death. He walked to the side of the bed, grabbed Oliver's hand, no response. He stayed with him until the youth group was getting ready to leave. Then he stood, squeezed Oliver's hand for what he feared was the very last time, and said, as he said so many times, "I'm sorry, Oliver, I have to go. I love you." And then he felt a squeeze. Oliver had responded. Now sobbing, Daryl stumbled to the door, trying to regain his composure. He did not see the young woman standing there, almost bumped into her. "I'm sorry," he said. I didn't see you." "It's all right," she said. "I'm actually waiting to see you. I'm Oliver's granddaughter. He's dying, you know." "Yeah, I know." "I wanted to meet you," she said, and then she told him a story. "My grandfather and I have always been very close. When the doctor said he was dying, I came immediately. They said he couldn't talk, but he's been talking to me. Not much, but I know what he's saying. Last night he woke up. His eyes were bright and alert. He looked straight at me and said, 'Please say goodbye to Jesus for me.' Then he laid back down and closed his eyes. I whispered to him, 'Grandpa, I don't need to say goodbye to Jesus. You're going to be with Jesus soon. You can tell him hello.' Grandpa struggled to open his eyes again. This time his face lit up with a mischievous smile, and he said, as clearly as I am talking to you, 'But Jesus comes to see me every month, and he may not know I'm gone.' Then he closed his eyes and hasn't spoken since. I told the nurse what he said, and she told me about you, how you come every month and hold Grandpa's hand. So I wanted to thank you for him, for me. And, well, I have to tell you, I never really pictured Jesus being sort of chubby and bald like you. But I imagine Jesus has been very glad to have you be mistaken for him. I know Grandpa is. Thank you." Oliver Leek died peacefully the next morning. Mistaken for Jesus. Was it a mistake? "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" sneers Nathaniel. "Dusty, poor, forgotten, out of the way Nazareth. Messiahs don't come from places like Nazareth." There was no need for him actually to meet Jesus, because he knew, as everyone knew, that Jesus, well, he was nothing more than a simple Jew, raised by simple, peasant, ignorant Jews who could be nothing, coming from this insignificant village. The Messiah would certainly be of more prominent parentage and come from a more significant place. And in response, all Philip can say is, "Come and see. Come and see." I think of us. Think of Nathaniel. Can anything good come out of Sebastopol? I mean, we're just folks, right? Trying to get by, swimming as fast as we can to keep our head above water. I suspect we don't often see God's fingerprint anywhere in the dust of our daily busyness. Hear God's call amidst the clamor and clutter of our lives, and yet, if a reluctant follower like Daryl, chubby and bald and all that, can be mistaken for Jesus, Maybe you and I can as well. No way, Daryl wanted to go with that church group to that convalescent home. No way Nathaniel wanted to go with Philip and see Jesus. But our text makes it crystal clear that Jesus is not in this work by himself. He is not a solo act. Whatever he wants to get done in the world, whatever changes he wants to make, he chooses not to do it alone. And so as Daryl rather reluctantly and surprisingly discovered, Jesus only just invites a group of ordinary, everyday people, people like you and me, to do that work with him. Could you be the one? Could be. It's only September, but my mind leaps ahead or leaps back to our Christmas Eve services. Those of you who have been here remember what it's like when at the end of the service we turn out all the lights and begin to light our candles. At first, the church is eerily dark and silent. Just one fragile candle burning there on the communion table. But then, you know, then the light gradually spreads as each of you lights the candle of the person next to you. And by the time we've finished singing Silent Night, the entire sanctuary is warmly aglow. And Kristen and I can stand here and see all of your beautiful faces reflected in the candlelight. Well, I wonder if we can take that as a parable for how Jesus does what he has to do. Jesus, the light of the world, illumines one person at a time until all of our lights finally shine together and the whole world is full of Christ's light. How do you suppose we'll be called to shine in the year to come? Again, are you the one? And one final point. Jesus goes to Andrew. Andrew goes to Nathanael, and Nathanael then seeks out Jesus. In our most recent listening process, which I mentioned, and we will have, as I said, a report after worship next Sunday, the vast majority of people who responded as to why they first came to this church and why they keep coming to this church pointed to a relationship, to an invitation they received from a church member, from someone they know. A few, but just very few, mentioned the Sunday sermons. I've never liked surveys very much, to tell you. But a vast majority of you came because of some personal contact. I've heard it said that everywhere we go, there goes the Church of Jesus Christ. For so many of us, somebody lived the story of Jesus in such a way that finally, like Nathaniel, we just had to come and see for ourselves. How are we going to live the story in the coming year? Whose life might we touch without even realizing it? Some of you have heard this Fred Craddock story before, but I share it again on this launch Sunday. My wife and I were vacationing in one of our favorite spots, the Great Smoky Mountains in Tennessee. We were at a dinner in a restaurant that had an excellent view of the mountains. Early in the meal, we were approached by an elderly man. "Good evening," he said. I said, "Good evening." He said, "You on vacation?" I said, "Yeah," all the while thinking to myself, "And what's it to you?" "Where are you from?" he asked. "Oklahoma." "What do you do in Oklahoma?" To myself, I was saying, "Leave us alone! We're on vacation!" But I said to him, "Well, I'm a Christian minister, Disciples of Christ." He paused for a moment, then said, "You know, I owe a great deal to a minister of a Christian church." So he pulled up a chair and sat down. I said, "Sure, have a seat." I didn't mean it. What was I going to do? "Who is this person?" He said, "You know, I grew up in these mountains. My mother was not married. And the whole community knew it. I was what was called an illegitimate child and worse names. In those days, that was a shame, and I was ashamed. When I went into town with my mother, I could see people staring at me, making guesses as to who was my father. At school, the children said ugly things to me, would not play with me at recess. I ate all my lunches alone. In my early teens, I began to attend a little church back in the mountains called Laurel Christian Church, one of yours. It had a minister who was both attractive and frightening. He had a heavy beard and a deep voice. I went to hear him preach. I don't know exactly why, but it just did something for me. However, I was afraid if they really knew who I was, knew my background, I would not be welcome. So I would arrive just in time for the sermon, and as soon as it was over, I left before anybody could say anything or ask me who I was. But one Sunday, people lined up in the middle aisle, and I was trapped. I couldn't get out. And before I could move, I felt a large, strong hand on my shoulder. It was the minister. I trembled in fear. He turned me around so he could look into my face. He just stared at me. I knew what he was doing. I knew he was going to make a guess as to who my father was. And then he said it. "Well, boy, I know you. Why, you're a child of..." And he paused. I knew what was coming next. I knew I was about to be humiliated. I knew I would never be in that church again. And then he spoke again. "Yes, I know you, boy. Why, you're a child of God. I see a striking resemblance, boy." Then he swatted me on the bottom and said, "Now you go out there, child of God, and claim your inheritance." I left that building a different person. You could honestly say that was the first day of my life. Craddock says, "I was so moved by his story, I had to ask his name. He said, 'Oh, my name's Ben Hooper.' And then I remembered. I remember my father talking when I was just a boy, talking about how the people of Tennessee had twice elected as governor a man who was an illegitimate child, Ben Hooper. You just never know how Jesus might choose to use us, no matter how inadequate, stupid, fat, or bald we may feel. But he will. Sometimes Jesus calls disciples through other disciples who don't know how good they are at calling disciples. It's so much easier just to sit here, look at Jesus, believe he is the light of the world, rather than to look at ourselves and each other and believe we are called to be light of the world. But he does, and we are. So don't be so afraid to let your light shine. This text and so many texts tell us that we can change and keep changing. I said much the same thing last week, I know, but on this launch Sunday, I want to say it again. We are not trapped in our histories or our fears. We can set ourselves and our communities on a new course. And I know our progress toward Jesus' vision is often painfully slow and halting. But much like Nathaniel, much like Daryl in the convalescent home or frightened young Ben Hooper in that church, there are those moments. And they will come, maybe today, maybe in the coming year. They'll come, those moments when we catch a glimpse of the people we might become.